guys, it's the Great Debates. What up?
Yeah.
Right on.
Right on.
Healy is in the frigging zone, man. Oh, God, look at this guy.
Look at the intensity.
Just a sniper's eyes. Oof.
I don't care. You think you're scaring me right now?
You sound scared.
I'm just pumped. A little scared.
Yeah, I can smell the sweat coming off you.
Whoa. Gross.
Whoa.
I know.
It's getting weird.
Now I smell pee in your pants.
Okay, cool. What? Guys, let's debate. Let's not waste any time. I have topic for you. This is a listener top submitted by Beaumont X Blast.
Cool.
Come again?
Beaumont X Blast.
On Twitter?
On Twitter, I think.
Sure.
Is that right?
Whatever, man. Let's debate.
Let's go. Let's not dwell anymore
thanks,
on
Mr.
That,
thank
the
you,
absurdity
Mr. Blast.
Of that name. Thank you, Mr. X Blast.
Mr. X Blast.
Bo. To his friends.
Bo X Blast. Guys, 3 minutes on the clock. Healy taking the pro. Topic is Texas isn't that big.
Steve Healy taking the pro. Look, Texas is not that big. It's not even the biggest state. Alaska's bigger than Texas. Here's a fact. The only fact I can come up with off the top of my head, we don't do any research here on the Great Debates. We go right into it in case you're new to the show. But you are allowed to use facts that you happen to remember. And one that I remember is that the Amazon watershed is 10 times the size of Texas. That's big. Texas, everybody's going on and on about how big Texas is. What Texas really is fairly featureless. So driving across it is a numbing experience. And it's quite common to drive across it from one end to the other if you're on the 10 and you're going from the East Coast to the West Coast of the U.S. So Texas seems big to you, but it's not that big. Mongolia's big, twice the size of Texas, something like that. Alaska's big, bigger.
I think that's a fact you just made up, that Mongolia is twice as big as Texas.
Sounds right.
Texas is enormous. We don't have to overthink this. It's huge. It's the second biggest state. There's... How many things on Earth are bigger than Texas?
Brazil.
100?
Africa.
In the world of...
Australia.
How many...
China.
Hold
Russia,
on a second.
Europe. Canada.
Right.
The Northwest Territory is like four times the size of Texas.
And you know what all of these things have in common? They're huge. They're that big. And bigger. In the world of things, Texas is... so close to the highest you could possibly get in terms of size. There's billions and billions of things. Texas ranks 100 in size, roughly. That's
100
enormous.
In what? Wait, what? Texas, what? Texas ranks 100 in what? What category?
Size.
Of what? Things?
Yes.
No, that's crazy.
I don't think it's that crazy at all.
Okay, I'm going to try in the time remaining to list 100 things bigger than Texas. Russia, Canada, Africa, Australia, Greenland, Europe, just the southern part of Africa, Siberia. This is boring.
Yeah, I don't know why.
But,
you
I mean,
to do
my
this.
Point is that Texas is not that small compared to actually big things like huge countries.
It even compared to big countries, it kind of holds its own. Mm. It's bigger. I believe it's about the same size as France. That's a pretty
nobody
big country.
That's a great... I'm really glad you brought that up because nobody thinks France is that big. France's thing is not being big. Germany is bigger than France. Nobody thinks Germany is that big. Texas isn't that big.
If you
big.
Live in Europe,
Texas
you think
people,
that Germany and France are big, you
Texas
dumbass.
Texas people fetishize the size of Texas, but it's not that big. They've invented this myth about its bigness because they love... I don't know, it makes them feel good to think about how big Texas is. But really what it is featureless and lame and nothing. It's a whole lot of nothing.
Whether or not it has features is totally irrelevant. I also don't think that like the thing that people have built up about Texas is its size. It's just a fact. It is that big.
Ooh.
Medina.
A lot of wacky shit on this one.
It got wacky.
It got wacky. First of all, Texas is featureless. I know that we're going to hear about that.
Yeah. I mean, hey, as always, the stuff you say in the debate, you're trying to win the debate.
Right.
Don't necessarily mean that.
Well, that's what, I mean, opinions are one thing, but facts, you should try to adhere close to what is actually true. And Texas, we all know, is far from featureless.
I've written extensively on my blog about driving across Texas, the interesting nature of the features of Texas, but relative to something like... Montana, France, Texas's landscape is fairly monotonous.
great.
I think Texas is pretty big.
Yeah, no shit. It's huge.
That,
it's
also, we're not assessing whether Texas is big. We're assessing who won the debate.
Fair yeah, point. Fair okay. point.
I don't know.
All right.
Okay.
This is a close one.
No money changes hands.
Yeah. Push. Vegas push.
It's tough. Are we in the host chat?
Yeah, guys, host it's chat. The Great Debates host chat.
We got the live event coming at the Slipper Room in New York City. Buy
it's going to be good. May 22nd.
May 22nd, Sunday night.
Yeah, right. Wait. We're announcing our live event right now.
Yeah.
Buy your ticket. Dave is beating me up about being too self-promotional.
Ugh, boring. Let me talk for a second. Thanks. This is what I do. Guys, Great Debates fans in New York City, if you want to see us live, come out to the Slipper Room in New York on May 22nd. You can get your tickets online. Just Google it or something.
It's at theslipperroom.com. It's on our website.
Anyway, it's going to be really fun. We have fun when we do live events. We'd love to see you out there. We'd love to shake some hands and wave some waves.
Get your tickets fast.
We're going to have some special guests there, too, and it's going to be really exciting and fun. Okay, that's all I'll say.
Cool. All right.
Is that okay, Davis?
Yeah, I loved it. That's great. I'm psyched about the live event.
Me too.
Dave, Texas memories. So you ever been to Texas?
I've been to Texas a couple times.
Where you been?
I've been
Talk.
To Austin. I've been to, I've been in the Houston airport for a very long layover.
Cool.
That's a great airport to layover in.
Damn right it is. You want to hear a story about it?
Yeah. It's host chat, baby.
As a child, my family and I were stuck at the Houston airport for what turned into like an 8-hour layover.
Okay.
Was not expected to be that long, and I think we missed our connecting flight or something.
Okay.
And so what we did was we played a game wherein my sister and I became a team against my parents, and we each got, I believe it was $10, and the game was to buy the least appropriate gifts for the other people.
This is great. What fun.
So my sister and I got to roam the airport, like, and we bought like a African American women's hair care magazine, and we exchanged some money into lira, I think. And
that's
I
forget, so funny.
I know it's great.
Yeah, great
yeah
job.
My parent. It was a great idea. Great time killer.
Medina, Texas memories.
Definitely got robbed in the or burgled. My car Ooh. Was broken into, and all I was on a cross country trip.
Oh.
All of the stuff that my whole suitcase stolen while I was in a Target parking lot.
We need Texas justice on the guys who did that.
Yeah. If you guys know who has my tuxedo, please find Oof. Him and
give some good looking fella out there.
Yeah.
If you see a handsome guy in a nice tuxedo.
The case of the Texas tuxedo.
The Texas tuxedo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on the subject of Texas being boring, one time I was in Marfa, Texas, mm-hmm. and I was going to drive to Austin, about an 8-hour drive.
That's a long, boring drive.
Nothing to see, really. But I was talking to a guy in Marfa about the drive, and he said, you know, I used to think that drive was really boring. But then I realized, because there's a whole lot of nothing out the window, but then I realized everything is something.
Wow. Well, that is meaningless.
Mm.
Sounds profound. I don't think it is.
Something to think about as a drive.
I was on that drive, basically, that long stretch of the 10 west of Austin, and got caught in the most insane thunderstorm that I've ever... I thought I was going to die. Maybe I've talked about it on this podcast before, but we had to pull off the side of the road and hide under an overpass until this...
Terrifying.
Terrifying.
Texas is big, man.
Yeah, Texas big is big and scary.
You know, a lot of people don't know this. The town of Marfa...
Yeah.
Do you know where it got its name?
Say.
What? Do you...
Go ahead.
Adele's friend, Martha.
Oh.
Called her Marfa.
That's funny.
It's okay. What were you going to say?
I got nervous because there was a story about how Marfa got his name. Did you know this?
No. Let's hear the real story.
It's like on plaques and stuff in Marfa, they used to say that the town got its name from the railroad tycoon's wife was reading the book The Brothers Karamazov.
Hmm.
And there's a character named Marfa in the book. This was like official history.
Huh.
But then some guy who's like really passionate about Texas history, they have these kinds of guys in Texas.
Love it.
Tracked it, like really went to work on the problem and realized that couldn't possibly be true. The book hadn't been translated into English yet or something.
That's great.
Wow. And, cool.
But still the mystery of why it's called Marfa.
This is much like the famous Hillary Clinton Sir Edmund Hillary.
Tell the listeners about that because I'm interested in this.
Well, I'm sure you've heard this by now.
Mm, what is it?
Hillary Clinton had the chance to meet Sir Edmund Hillary late in his life, I'm sorry.
Right.
And at the time, she told a beautiful story about how when she was a child, her mother reminded her that she was actually named after Sir Edmund Hillary. That's where her name came from. Mm-hmm. And that it was a reminder that anything is possible and you should be strive to do the things that, you know, people believe to be impossible. And then it was a beautiful story and it got a lot of press. And then like the next day, someone did 4 seconds of research and realized that he didn't climb Mount Everest until she was like 6 years old. And the Hillary campaign or her spokespeople, I don't think she was running for office at the time, she was like, well, her mother, what really it was is that her mother said that her name, she shared a name with Sir Edmund Hillary and that all things are possible and isn't that lovely. Okay, she just lied about the origin of her name.
I'm going to let Hillary off the hook on the specific. I think this is the kind of thing that can just sort of a family legend that you misremember. And I don't think she was lying.
I so strongly disagree.
I don't think she was making up a lie.
Oh, I totally disagree. I feel like the origin of one's name is about as like sacred and like unmistakable as a story. I can't imagine.
Okay, so you think
someone...
Hillary is like a deranged person who made up this lie just to have 2 minutes of small talk with Sir Edmund Hillary, or what?
No, because it sounded good. Because her whole life is about gaining power.
So she just made up this lie, like in the moment, or she'd made it up a long time ago.
I don't know which, but I think she maybe in the moment she subconsciously was like, "Oh, this is a great opportunity." I think it is possible that her mother, you know, referenced Sir Edmund Hillary as someone whose name she had in common with, and said like, you know, you should reach for the unthinkable the way Sir Edmund Hillary did. But I don't think it's possible that her mom told her an untruth about the origin of her name, and then she just happened to pass that on. It seems to me like it would easily have occurred to Hillary Clinton that the timing was off. She lied. I don't understand what the way around that is. I don't think it's that horrible, but I find it so. I do actually think it's egregious. It's not horrible. It's not it's not like, you know, it's not malevolent, but it's so icky.
What are the chances that this is going to change any of the minds of Great Debate listeners who might be Hillary voters?
I'm actually surprised by Dave's level of vitriol about it. I mean, I think this story sticks to Hillary because she already has a rep for dissembling and non-truth. I think there are other far more upsetting examples of that. I think, to me, I don't know the details of the incident, but I bet if we looked into it, it's possible there was just some miscommunication or something that, you know, this is misreported, or her mother misremembered, or the mother said something to Hillary. Hillary misremembered what her mother said. I'm willing to let her off the hook for this one.
I don't know. I don't like it.
Sir Edmund Hillary, by the way, cool dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Top three facts about Sir Edmund Hillary. What do you got?
Beekeeper.
Oh, this is amazing.
That was his sort of profession in New Zealand.
Number one beekeeper.
And, you know, I was watching, I'm really into mountain climbing documentaries. And if you watch documentaries about Sir Edmund Hillary, like on top of everything else, this guy's like an insanely strong, jacked up athlete. And on the expedition to climb Everest in 52, they were finally going to go for it. There was Sir Edmund Hillary and a buddy of his from New Zealand. And then some guys from like basically English public school boys, fancy English guys. And these guys looked down on the New Zealand guys. They thought they were kind of colonial goons. And it was up to the guy who was in charge of the expedition to pick who was going to make the key assault that would summit the mountain. And, you know, he was an English guy. And it was felt that they were going to be biased. And I believe the first guys to make a try for the summit were some of these English public school boys. But then the weather was bad or something. They got turned around, and Hillary and the Sherpa Tenzing Norgay, they got the shot at the summit, and they did it.
That's cool.
Yeah. Because
they were ripped.
Because they were ripped and jacked and strong as hell.
And they weren't
not
punks
kidding around. And then Hillary spent the rest of his life basically trying to make life better for the people of Nepal and Tibet, orphanages, hospitals, whatever.
That's amazing.
The news, you know about the news story being broken. You know about that, right?
No, please tell us.
The news of the summiting of Mount Everest was broken like the day of Queen Elizabeth's coronation.
Huh.
So it was like doubly great Empire Day. Now, news was broken by James Morris, a great English newspaper reporter, who later in life became Jan Morris. A transition to female, and is a famous, or in the world of travel writing, quite acclaimed travel writer. She wrote books as James and as Jan about her experiences traveling the world. You know, she wrote a good one about the city of Trieste. Great writer. Check her out.
Did you prepare for this yesterday? This is unbelievable.
No, I'm passionate about Sir Edmund Hillary and Everest and all that stuff.
God, that was great.
Is there a profession that you can think of that evokes more both mastery and tranquility at the same time than beekeeping?
Great question, yeah. Well, that's cool.
I think beekeeping painting.
It's so like harmonious, and what you're getting. But there's what about the danger,
like being a botanist or something. Or
but
like,
what about the element of like they're dangerous, and you have to maintain calm.
You got the smoke, and you got your thing. You got a hat on. I mean, really, how many beekeepers die every year from beekeeping?
Man, I'll put in the news my top five favorite mountain climbing documentaries.
I would like that. When you said that, I got a little excited.
Cool.
Let's turn to the great debate.
This is like, okay, so we know what the topic is, and I'm excited because people are talking. Too. Like, this is a...
We've been trying to get more into, like, what's on people's minds.
Yeah. What do we got? Yeah. Dina? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
I've got a topic for you. The topic is Steve Healy.
I'm taking the con, actually. Pro?
Okay. No. Yes, Dave this King is so going to take the pro.
This is so exciting.
So, Dave, you'll go first. The topic is OJ's lawyers should be ashamed of themselves.
I'm Dave King. I'm taking the pro. OJ's lawyers should be ashamed of themselves.
Who are we talking about again? OJ?
Simpson.
Simpson, right. Okay.
Simpson.
Juice,
to clarify.
Juice.
As his lawyers often called him, Juice.
According to the show.
The lawyers of O.J. Simpson, simply put, knew that he had murdered two people in cold blood and decided to do everything possible. In some cases, I might argue, over the line of the law to get their client off. They should be ashamed of themselves. They should be ashamed, A, for representing a murderer. They should be ashamed for the tactics that they used. They should be ashamed also for the fact that they used his celebrity to their advantage. They should be ashamed of the fact that they used the case itself to further their careers. They should be ashamed of the part that they played in this horrible circus. They should be ashamed of the press conferences that they held. They should also be ashamed of the way that they handled evidence. They should be ashamed of the... They should be ashamed of the simple fact that they read what was essentially a suicide note on the air to millions and millions of people. That alone is enough to be ashamed of. What is... A, as a lawyer, B, as a human being. What a horrible thing to do. They should be ashamed of themselves.
I can hear, I'm Steve Healy and I'm taking the con, surprisingly. I can hear, I think serious listeners of the podcast can also hear the kind of timidness and weakness in Dave's argument because this isn't a strong one for you, Dave. The fact of the matter is that we have an adversarial legal system, and it's the job of a lawyer to fight as hard as he can for his client. That's just the way the system's set up. So OJ, anybody accused of a crime, deserves a vigorous defense. This is going back to John Adams, who represented the guys who did the Boston Massacre. Now, let's go through piece by piece. If you're OJ's lawyer, you have to use every weapon at your disposal. So yes, they used the weapon of his celebrity. They used press conferences. They played the game in public. Don't you think the prosecution was doing that? Don't you think that cops do that stuff? I mean, look, in this particular case, was justice served? I don't know, but it's not their job to work that out. It's their job to be as vigorous as possible in defending their client. Kardashian, Sheck, Johnny Cochran, these guys were experienced lawyers, and they had seen through their careers occasions where innocent people have been sent to jail for crimes they didn't commit. They've worked on cases where people have been executed for crimes they didn't commit. Johnny Cochran had spent his whole career fighting against an LAPD department, which was unquestionably racist. and aggressive in their tactics. That his whole career was fighting this. Over time, federal commissions had declared that he was basically right, that the LAPD was outrageously racist, racially biased, and overly aggressive in their tactics. So when he gets this particular case, his job is to attack it as vigorously as possible, and that's exactly what he did. Did they fight hard? Did they fight in public? Did they fight in the courtroom as aggressively as possible, attacking every weak angle they could? Yeah, that's their job. And sure, the end result is a murder. I think a murderer got off, but it's not the lawyer's job to be ashamed of that. They were doing their job as effectively as possible.
Of course, it's not their job to be ashamed of that. That doesn't mean that they shouldn't. Are we in a free skate
here?
Yeah,
free skate.
It doesn't mean that they shouldn't be ashamed. Obviously, their job isn't to, you know, act shamefully. But what they did was they're beholden to some other standards, if you will. One of them is to only present the facts. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that they did was stray as far away from possible as the facts. They introduced evidence, things like this Colombian drug group that they knew had absolutely nothing to do with the case.
That's was artful, that's skillful lawyering. That's not shameful. It was perfect. It was legal. They were doing it in a courtroom in front of a judge with a prosecutor there who could challenge anything they were doing. And a judge would rule on whether it was legally allowed. And they were just playing the game more effectively.
Just because something is legal doesn't mean, just because something is legal or artful doesn't mean that it's something you should be proud of.
Okay, but their job is,
and I don't think they should be proud of.
I'm not sure. I'm not necessarily sure they should be proud or ashamed. But I do think that their job was to fight as hard as possible, and that's exactly what they did.
They did more than fight as hard as possible. They fought irresponsibly. They fought by introducing things that were not material to the case. I'd like to address another point, which is this whole thing about Johnny Cochran spent a whole life. That's fine. Like fighting the LAPD was racist. Yeah, it was horrible. Yeah, he can be proud of those things. He can also be ashamed of representing O.J. Simpson and turning the case into something other than a case about whether or not O.J. Simpson killed two people.
Just as he could be
proud of fighting against racism, but also ashamed of having beaten the shit out of his wife. He should be ashamed of that too.
People
do things that you can be proud of and ashamed of in your lifetime.
Okay, but he's taking on the case. And his job is to fight as hard as possible. So one of the ways that he fought was by bringing up the fact that Mark Furman had said racially incendiary stuff. One of the things he brought up was the idea that the LAPD had a history of crooked and aggressive tactics. So he introduced those things into the case where they may not have applied, but he's fighting a battle and he's fighting it as hard as possible. He was fighting it legally in a courtroom in front of a judge. What's to be ashamed of?
Well, taking money from a guy who killed two people and using it to further your career.
In our legal system, also, this is how it works. I mean, look, let's take Dershowitz, right?
Again, just because it fits within the confines of our legal system doesn't mean that that's like okay to do. I mean, everybody does things, or not everyone, but there's so many examples of people who do things legally that they should still be ashamed of.
Let's take, I don't know a ton about Kardashian, but let's take Sheck and Dershowitz, right? These guys get huge amounts of money for helping on the OJ case, but they also spend a ton of their time working on like the Innocence Project and like
they can be proud of that. Guy. That's irrelevant. The question isn't they should be whether they should be proud of working for the Innocence Project.
So they don't have to be
project.
Ashamed of taking the money jobs that fund, like it's all of a piece of vigorous
it's not
legal
of a
defense.
Piece. They represented a murderer. They knew he was guilty. They turned a blind eye to that.
Do you think they should have turned it down because they knew he was a murderer? They should have been like, we're not representing him?
I actually do. Yes, of course.
Somebody had to represent him.
Yes, someone who believed that he didn't do it should have represented him. Not friends of his who knew that he killed two people and were actually, one of whom was angling to get a plea bargain and the other set of whom were trying to make it about, knew that their only chance of winning was making the case about something entirely other than the actual case itself. Knew that the best way to do this would be to ignore the facts, to use, every tactic in the book to make the jury think that this was about something other than whether a man had sliced the head nearly entirely off of his ex-wife and an innocent bystander. There's a certain standard, I'm sorry, that I believe which holds, which is that like it's okay for a client, for a lawyer to defend a client if he knows that he's guilty as long as he believes they're not legally guilty. There's a difference between factual guilt and legal guilt. This is my loose understanding of the law, but I don't believe that a lawyer is supposed to defend his client if they believe that he is both factually and legally guilty. And I see no way that there's any room for any possibility other than everyone who represented O.J. Simpson knew exactly what he had done, knew that he was both factually and legally guilty. They knew that his blood was, I mean, we don't even have to go over, would you at least agree that they knew that he killed two people?
It's not their job to think about it or to pass judgment on
it. It's not their job to think about whether he two killed, that's their whole
job. No, it's the jury's job to pass judgment on whether he did it or not. Their job is to take every piece of evidence they have that they can use to get their client off. And they know going into the trial that the prosecution is going to be using every weapon and every tool they have to put him in prison. So their job is to fight or to get him the death penalty. I don't even know what was
you
at stake.
And I both read the book, the Jeffrey Toobin
book. I only half read it.
Okay, you know that Robert Shapiro from Go was using this not as an opportunity to altruistically get this guy not to, you know, try to argue for his innocence, whether or not he did it. His whole objective was to make himself more famous. So too the case with F. Lee Bailey. Shapiro even says to F. Lee Bailey, you're not going to get paid because this case is going to be so enormously useful for it, for your career, that you're not going to, that I don't need to pay you. That alone is something to be shameful of. Those are not the reasons to represent someone in a court of law. The reasons to represent someone are because you feel bound by obligation to represent the facts in a way that you in such a way that you believe paints him as not guilty.
The game is set up in a certain way, and these guys played by the rules of the game. They have nothing to be ashamed of.
It's so crazy that you can't just say that just because this is a way things set up and they played by the rules that they shouldn't be ashamed of themselves. I hate to go here, but do you think that Nazi officers who killed, you know, people in the Holocaust shouldn't be ashamed simply because that's the way it was set up?
You're exposing the weakness of your argument.
Why?
You're going there.
Why is that a weakness? Why can't people be ashamed of something they do simply, whether even if it's within the confines of a system or within the law? They broke no laws.
You can't
they
bring
were doing
up Nazi
what they
officers,
were told.
Man. Come on.
Why not?
Because that's a totally different thing. It's demeans debating to go there, right?
In high school debate, one of the most common things is to bring things to their most logical extreme. I think it's actually very relevant.
They were operating within the confines of a legal American system.
Yes, so too the Nazi officers. Of the pure direction of the Third Reich. Why shouldn't they be ashamed? Your whole point is as long as you're operating within the rules of the game, then why should they be ashamed? And I say to you, it doesn't have to be the Holocaust. Pick any oppressive system or any place where people are doing some
horrible
things.
These guys were fighting what they perceived to be an oppressive system.
Well, one of them was in part, and he was also Cochrane, and he was also using it enormously to his advantage. As you know, Robert Shapiro and other members of the team didn't want to play the race card at all. They thought that was all hoopla and it wouldn't work. They were wrong, obviously. But simply because one of them... my point is that it was only Cochrane who was really trying to fight the system, so to speak. The other people were there just to make money and to get their faces on TV.
Is that your closing statement?
I don't know. They should be so... I can't believe that they wouldn't be ashamed of this. Also, by the way, there were lawyers who knew that he did it and immediately stepped out of there. They were like, I'm not fucking touching this. This guy's a murderer. I don't want to defend him. There's no money. It's not worth the blood money to do this.
I think that OJ, like everybody else accused of a crime, deserves a vigorous defense.
I agree with you.
And these guys provided that. What did they do that was illegal?
Again, they didn't do anything that was illegal. Okay. They did things that were immoral. They did things that were disgusting. They did things in a shameful way. The law is not relevant here.
They had to play as hard as possible against a team that they knew was going to come at them as hard as possible. The fact that the prosecution basically collapsed isn't their responsibility.
I totally agree with you. The fact that they did do this only to make their names bigger, to make money, and to disregard the facts of the case is what's shameful.
They were doing their job as defense attorneys.
The idea that the law of the land and whether or not one should feel shame for what one's done are almost at odds with each other. They have very little to do with each other. I don't understand why you insist on adhering to this notion that, as long as they were staying within their legal lane, so to speak, that they shouldn't be ashamed.
I think it's a nasty, unpleasant job to defend murderers, but that we should be grateful that somebody will do that
again,
for us. Because that's how we constructed our system.
I agree with you.
If lawyers went into defending their clients with, a half-hearted attitude or putting certain things off the table because they were a little bit repugnant or a little bit upsetting or a little bit, or they might have a feeling of shame about it, that would weaken our American legal system providing fair trials to everybody. This not has nothing to do with Nazi officers who are breaking the...
It
most
does
basic
when you
premises
bring,
of
I'm
human
only bringing
life.
That up because you keep insisting on this idea that just as long as you do things that are legal, you shouldn't be ashamed for what you've done. And I use the Nazi officers only as an example to prove the point that adherence to the law does not mean that one is should not be ashamed of what they've done. Here's my closing statement.
Okay.
My closing statement is basically this. I don't fault them for representing O.J. Simpson. I don't think they should be ashamed of that. You're absolutely right. Even the most vile people in the world deserve to be defended. What I think is shameful is the manner in which they defended him. That's my closing statement.
Okay, my con statement is their job was to defend him using any tool at their disposal, and they did that effectively. They did their job. It's a job set up basically in the Constitution, and they're part of that system. Sure, I think O.J. should be in prison, but their job is not, they're not to judge him on that. Their job is to fight for their client using any means necessary within the law, and that's exactly what they did. No shame.
Right. Again, as like you've been saying all along, as long as you follow the law, you shouldn't be ashamed.
You closed it out. Deans, talk to us.
This was a great one.
What?
This was a really good one.
Oh, I hated it.
You did?
As soon as Nazi officers get introduced,
well,
debate
I didn't
is
like
fucked.
That part either. As the moderator, I feel like often my job is to really pick the person who won, and I try to dissociate my own views. But I have to admit that as a listener of the debate that we just had, I was on Dave's side. Mm.
Interesting. Well, yeah, it's a better side.
No,
right?
But no, because like, and the other thing is like, I will say that I think Healy, you had the harder, you know, they have to bring something other than just the obvious, like, well, it's their job to do this.
I think that's it. The debate's over.
But that's Healy. The whole point. Like, you've got to jump, you've got to like leap a little bit above that.
I think this is an open and shut debate.
I wish you had gone further with this notion that there was something larger at stake here and that it might be worth getting one man off to prove that there's a larger injustice.
That's a good argument.
Yeah, no kidding. I could have won if I had your side, but just shows your weakness as a debater.
I don't think I should have taken a non-life-affirming side.
It's hard to know which is more life-affirming.
I think this one is pretty clear-cut.
It's safe to say that anytime I'm able to invoke Nazis, I'm usually on the right side.
I don't like that. I think you're basically DQ'd if you bring up Nazis.
Why?
Because it's so just like... Ugh.
I understand that it's a hacky argument, but it doesn't mean that it's not correct.
I think you fought this the way Kardashian and Nephilim Bailey fought the O.J. trial. You know, shamefully, but effectively.
Well, but I believe it to be true. This is one where I actually do think they should be ashamed of what they've done.
Okay, what do you think they should be, like, where did they go wrong? Where should they be ashamed?
Probably taking the case.
But somebody had to take the case.
Yeah, I understand. That can be a public defender. Or someone who really believed that he didn't do it.
Where are you going to find that guy?
I don't know, but that's why he should have gone to jail, because he killed two people.
Kardashian's basically his buddy.
By the way, a point I should have made, clearly, Robert Kardashian was ashamed.
Yeah. He seems like he was broken by it. I'm only going on the TV series.
I think
I don't know.
Was pretty clear in the book, too, but I mean,
again,
how could you
I
not
didn't,
be?
You're misunderstanding how much of the book I've read.
I understand that it's less than half. Am I still misunderstanding it? Okay.
Well, so I haven't gotten to the point where Kardashian feels ashamed.
I mean, he's not a huge figure in the book, as you can imagine. His part is amped up in the
If Shapiro,
show.
Let's see, Dershowitz is alive, right? Effie Bailey is dead.
Mm-hmm. He gone.
If Shapiro and Kardashian's dead.
He gone.
If Shapiro wants to be on Great Debates, should we let him be on it?
Yeah, I'd be willing to have him on the Great Debates.
Okay.
I just because he should be ashamed of what he's done doesn't mean that I wouldn't have a discussion with him. I'm sure there's some things that all of us have been ashamed of.
And what do you think he should be ashamed of? That he knew OJ did it and still defended him?
I actually think, oddly enough, that Shapiro has less to be ashamed of than the others, because Shapiro was pretty clearly fighting for a plea bargain from early on, which at least kind of tacitly...
Which is the right way to go. That's something you don't have to be ashamed
about. At least is
this
kind of like, you know... seems like the more, I don't want to say honorable, but in a world where, yes, like the nature of the prosecution and the defense is that they're adversaries. But
okay, so who is the most to be ashamed of? Bailey?
Maybe Bailey or I think Johnny Cochran should be is ashamed. Kardashian was ashamed. He should be ashamed of what he did.
See, Cochran, I think, was fighting a larger battle. He was fighting expose the LAPD, and he did it.
Well, you know,
wrong forum.
Yeah, wrong forum.
Well, take any forum you can. You know,
he was already like on the Today Show. He already had a pretty large platform to speak his truths.
And actually falling on that sword might have helped the cause a little bit more. You know?
Interesting.
I think it does an injustice to innocent people when guilty people get off. That's where he may not have to have been ashamed for what he did in particular for O.J. Simpson, this guy that he was his client, but for other innocents out there that he might hope to defend in the future.
That's right.
That's a disservice.
That's right. Well, but he stayed within the law. He was just doing his job. He played the game fairly.
I think he set up the rules of the game and then you play ball, right?
Yeah, I guess, but I don't know.
Yes,
it's an ugly system. It's a gnarly, ugly system.
That's just goading you now. Bums out the debate every time.
We learned that Healy doesn't like Nazis today.
Excuse me. I learned that Healy's a Nazi sympathizer today. I learned that he believes that as long as a Nazi man was doing his job, that he should be ashamed of what he did. I'm joking with you, buddy. I love you.
Do you think if we remove F. Lee Bailey and add you to OJ's legal team, would OJ have gotten off?
Yeah, he still wins. He'd be fine. I think he was going to get, as long as the trial was more than like 2 months long, he was going
to
get.
Would you have brought something to the team, do you think?
No, probably. I don't think. I think that like there was, in hindsight, it was almost like as long as they started talking about race and tainting of evidence, and as long as it was a long, boring, confusing trial, it didn't matter what.
See,
here's
an argument that I kind of wish I'd made. If we want to keep going on this.
Sure.
Yeah, sure.
Like, it's easy in hindsight to think these guys fought it a little too hard, but they thought, like, Jesus, they got this guy. He's done. We got to throw out, just to do our basic due diligence, throw everything out there. I think they may have been surprised by how effective their various tactics were.
I think you're right. I think they
I think maybe in retrospect, they're like, oh, shit, we didn't know we were going to get them off.
Right.
But should you be ashamed of that? I don't know. I'm not sure.
That's interesting.
I don't know.
Yeah. So they thought whole glove thing was like, I'm going to try this.
I think they were stunned when that went that way. Like, didn't Darden give the glove to them? They didn't mean to have OJ try on the glove.
They realized that, they basically dared Darden to bring up the glove.
Yeah, I think throwing out the Colombian drug lords thing, that's just decent lawyering, right? You got to come up with some alternate theory.
I think that's not
they don't have to be ashamed of that.
It's introducing facts that aren't facts and have nothing to do with the case.
They're trying to present an alternate theory that the jurors can cling to. I think that's pretty reasonable.
Yeah, but there's a respectable way to go about it. There's a way to do your job that is shameful, and there's a way to do it that's respectable, and they chose the shameful path.
I'm not hearing what the example is of the shamefulness.
Not introducing Colombian drug lords.
No, they should do that. I'm with them on that. You're defending this guy that all the evidence points to him.
Not holding press conferences every day. Not treating it like a reality show where basically you're looking for the camera.
To me, that's like odious, but like they're trying to fight for this guy and they have to use those weapons.
Odious things are the kinds of things we tend to be ashamed of.
I don't want to do it, but these guys kind of rejoice in that kind of thing.
Yes, they should be ashamed of it. You're absolutely right. I think we're hitting on something, which is that, yes, these are the kinds of people who tend to rejoice in doing the things that people should be ashamed of.
Mm.
Not unlike...
I'm kind of convincing myself here.
What? Convincing yourself what?
That maybe they don't have that much to be ashamed of.
Ooh...
Well, I
wish you had brought that argument
earlier. I know,
because I feel a little bit like it was a Hail Mary pass whole thing. That's why it was such a circus.
Whew, what a debate!
Top.
See, now Healy's back on the train that this is a good debate.
Yeah.
All right, Healy. Top and Medina. Okay. Oh, are you watching People vs.
No, I'm not watching it yet.
Healy, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
top four performances on the People versus O.J. Simpson, and then the two worst performances. Go.
Top four is Paulson.
Yeah.
Amazing as Marsha Clark. I think the guy who does Lance Ito is doing a great understated job.
Underrated job, yes.
It's understated.
A, yes,
doesn't
yes.
draw. A,
yeah. The, agreed, yeah. agreed.
I think Nathan Lane as F. Lee Bailey, kind of out of the box casting. You know, F. Lee Bailey was this marine, hard drinking guy. They got Nathan Lane doing a great job. The guy playing Darden, that that's Sterling. Mm. What's his name?
I don't know. Courtney B. Vance's cock.
He's great. But I think the guy playing Darden is kind of like bringing a lot more richness to that character than I would have. I think that guy bringing some life and spirit into the role.
Yes.
Two worst. I mean, I'm hard pressed to name them. The Furman guy seems a little bit, he's playing too much the darkness. I'd like to see that soften, but I don't know. Maybe that's what Furman's like. Some people are coming at Travolta. I think Travolta's doing a great job, knows exactly what he's doing. It's beautiful.
Certainly fascinating. I'm transfixed by it. I don't know if it's good or bad, but I'm watching Travolta.
Yeah.
I don't think Cuba Gooding Jr. is knocking it out of the park.
Jeez.
But all the ones you mentioned are just staggering performances. They're crushing it.
Yeah,
especially for like the they're all somehow, I think this was said earlier by maybe a friend of ours, or maybe it was one of us, I don't remember, maybe it was you, that it's they're all in different shows and yet somehow together it works. It looks like they're all acting on different shows. Like there's different levels of melodrama and craziness and naturalism. And yet when you put it all together in this weird, hyped up stew, it somehow works. You can't take your eyes off.
I enjoyed myself today. I hope the listeners enjoyed themselves. The debaters got a good workout.
Hot
we announced
debate.
To you that
hot,
we're going to be hot. In New York live in the Slipper Room on May 22nd. The Great Debate Store is open for business. You can subscribe to our newsletter. We have hundreds of subscribers, but we think maybe there are more that want to check
fun.
In. Join the fun. You're going to get some all kinds of fun stuff on
it's
that.
It's a fun community.
And then, you know, as always, tweet your topics to us or email us, greatdebate69@gmail.com. GreatDebate69 at Twitter. We had fun. We'll see you next week. Great debates. Bye. The Great Debates is produced by Mark Carosello. Our audio engineer is Mackenzie Kellerman. The debaters are Steve Healy and Dave King. And the podcast is moderated by Dan Medina.